and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 137, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the...
Why are you laughing?
You said hello. Every week it gets me. And we're also joined by the Grand Pumbaa himself. It's Tony Esmond.
You make us go quiet before we start, and it always makes me a bit tense.
Because if I don't, then it's just going to be chaos. Like as soon as it starts,
you just keep talking and saying rude things.
I know we're having too much fun every week.
That's what it is.
And we've got a guest. You probably just heard her giggling just then. This week we're joined by an artist behind such titles as Magpie, Triskelion, The Lost Childhood, and an abundance of brilliant and thought-provoking artwork. So it's our pleasure to welcome Catherine Briggs to the show. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Pleasure. Yes, welcome. Yeah. Thanks for joining us on this evening.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a lovely old time in the world of comics at the moment, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
I'm feeling quite positive at the moment. I know that the world's kind of going to hell, but I'm feeling really good about comics.
We're sort of cheerful people out here, though, aren't we? We aren't the sort of depressed people. Yeah. We're cheerful about comics, and we pride ourselves in that, don't we?
Yeah. I did look up some of the hashtags that are going around with comics at the moment. I was like, oh, don't want to get involved in all that shit.
No. Do you know what? I was quite pleased. I didn't get any of that. I think I've muted just the right people, or unfollowed, or unfollowed.
Or blockchain is a wonderful thing for sort of getting out of those scenarios.
I was just always concerned that I'd block someone that I actually quite like. So I'm always concerned about the blockchains.
I suppose people are sort of multifaceted, aren't they? And even though they might think one thing, you might like them for another reason, I suppose, wouldn't you?
What is blockchain?
So that is when you can, I think it's a Chrome extension, at least the one that I've used is, you basically can go onto a horrible person on Twitter and block everybody who follows them in a winner.
Okay.
Certain elements, such as diversity in comics, you can just go on their sort of profile and block all people who follow them.
Yeah. Oh, don't say that, because I'll lose loads of followers.
Sorry.
Well, I can imagine, Tony. I can only imagine.
Look, if you like comics or dogs, that's the only two reasons to follow me. Yeah. I like dogs and comics. They're the two things.
I like cats and comics.
So. There you go.
There you go. You've covered all bases.
Yeah, there you go. We could actually be the most popular people on the internet, Tony.
You could do. We aren't. That's never gonna happen.
No.
But that's fine. I think you're very popular. I like to think you're a sort of popular kind of people person.
Yeah, I try.
People like you, don't they?
Yeah. Well, no, I
post
I can't
up pictures of chainsaws and my son.
Oh. If you have not seen this picture, what happened, Dan?
Just every time you go into like a DIY store and I see a chainsaw, it's got to, you know, get the wife to take a picture of me. And this time I kind of did it in like horror movie style, going to attack my son with a chainsaw.
He's quite an actor, because I truly believed that.
he's selling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't your classic chainsaw either, where it was sort of slightly meta, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Postmodern chainsaw attack, I think.
Kind of bring forth the fear when a 6-foot-1 man's tearing over you with a chainsaw. I imagine it's quite easy.
Yeah. Pretend I'm going to kill you, son. Think death.
Dad of the year, Dan Butcher.
That's what you said after that, Dan. Yeah, made me laugh. Yeah.
Or maybe he's Dan of the year. Who knows?
Have you ever swung a chainsaw around, Kevin?
Dan of all years.
Here's a man for all season, a Dan for all years.
Yeah. Did you ask Catherine if she's ever swung a chainsaw about?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I haven't. I'm sorry. No, I haven't.
Can
I've swung an axe.
Sort of multimedia art approach that a chainsaw could be involved. I think that's quite a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah. I thought you were doing it like as an American. Have you ever?
Oh, no. God,
okay.
We're not racist on this show, Catherine. Yeah.
Well, you say that.
Oh yeah. Is this some sort of blockchain sort of like fix that's happening now? Is she trying to set us up?
We'll just disappear off and we'll be left talking to each other.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Back on track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know where I think you can find some chainsaws in comics?
Oh, God, here we go.
What?
Go on.
You can probably find some in Comic House.
Oh no.
That was a weak segue. That was weak sauce. And I'm sorry, Pete, and everyone.
If anyone can point out a comic that has a chainsaw in Comic House, we give you a prize.
Yeah, good chat. Yeah. The first person, not everyone.
First person.
Oh, you know that's going to happen, isn't it? It's going to happen on the Facebook group. But yeah, I'm sure there is. Yeah,
I'll draw my little sketch of someone holding a chainsaw.
You're so generous, Dan.
Yeah,
you are generous, Dan.
Considering you're threatening to murder your son on social media
and get your wife to film it.
Yeah,
it was for social media likes, so I think that takes.
Oh well, that's worth it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Likewise, it's worth checking out comichouse.com.
Yes.
Yeah, especially if you can't get to a hardware store or maybe a convention in your area and you desperately need a fix of independent comics, then Comic House is the place to go. On the website, you'll find a huge library of comics you can order printed copies from, read digital, etc. Dan, do you know what ones are on there currently that are worth highlighting?
Yes, the two highlighted titles this week. It's the Andy Clift, The Adventures of Captain Cosmic, which is absolutely fantastic.
Oh,
I like that.
Yeah,
I like
that. Two words, home run. Or is that one
and,
word?
The next Comic House anthology, which is issue 10.
Who's in that? Low.
Who isn't? I don't know, because I've just got a picture of the cover.
Vincent's in it.
It features the last part of my Man in the Monster Hunter story. So there you go.
Nice one.
We're checking out. Yeah, there's so much stuff. And even our guest this week, Catherine, she's got lots of work on Comic House, which is worth checking out. And if you like reading your comics digitally, like some of us do, or if your local comic book shop is just rubbish, I'm not going to name names, but it's probably more me that's going to say that than anyone else, then you can check out the Comic House app. Now, if it's available now for only £3 a month, you get access to all the comics you could want on the Comic House directory, I believe. I think you can get a 14-day free trial, if I'm correct.
I believe you can.
You can indeed. So you should go to comichouse.com, sign up, find out more about it, and just check out some great indie comics, because there's more and more awesome stuff being added there all the time at the moment. So, yeah, I've definitely been getting more involved in sort of reading it recently. Now that
I've read a load this week, actually.
Yeah, now that I've got it working on my Kindle, it's been easier to sort of read the comics and that sort of, you know, that size, because on the phone it was a bit more difficult.
Yeah, tricky.
Yeah.
It's good to see the reviews starting to pop up as well.
Yeah.
Taking the time to read titles after they've read it.
Yeah, they've just done a bit of an update, haven't they, to the app, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I've updated that. I've not done that on the Kindle.
Oh, I need to do that. It's something about finding pages or something like that on it, is it? Or
I think it's got a bit more functionality on the app.
Yeah. I have to say, I read a couple of yours this week, Catherine, and I screenshot perhaps one of my favourite pages I've seen for a long time. Gorgeous page, and tweet it out. If you have a look at my Twitter, you'll see it.
Oh yeah, the one of the abstract pages.
Yes, gorgeous. Yeah, incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Which I think is a brilliant segue in itself.
Yeah. There you go.
So go to comichouse.com. Well, go to comichouse.com. That's the end of the ad. But yeah, speaking of art, one of the reasons we wanted Catherine on this show is that she does the sort of comics and stories that we haven't covered on this show before. And you know we like to cover all kinds of things. From the abstract, there's so much going on in each of her different books. And just the artwork alone is, like Tony said, there's some of the pages that are some of my favourite pages as well. And it's involving a lot of mixed media stuff as well.
Yes.
So we'll be getting into that in just a second, because I want to hear a lot about your art process.
Okay.
But let's start with a simple question. So what drew you to comics?
Geez, it's sort of a long, circuitous route. Like,
lay it on us.
Lay it on us.
Yeah, we've got time.
I went to art school to be a painter, and I had this very old school, traditional painting education. Like, I was, you know, painting from life and drawing casts of famous sculptures and color theory and all of that. And then when I got out of art school, it was like, I don't know what the hell to paint. So I just stopped. And I stopped for a while. And then I picked it up again later, and I taught myself how to do watercolors. But I was really sort of looking at like stories and telling my own story. And it just always interested in mythology. So when I went this is why I came to Scotland to do my master's, I was like, okay, I'm going to do something about story. So let's look at archetypes in story. and where do all these archetypes live in story nowadays? And it's, oh, they live in comic books. You know, these are where our heroes are.
Yeah.
So it was like, I'm going to make a comic book for my master's. And it was just sort of like an experiment. And obviously, like, well, I read comics and really enjoyed comics before, never thought to make one until then. And then it was like, I was hooked. I mean, it's amazing. I love it. Never going back to just doing sort of single paintings again. And yeah, I mean, like, so I guess it just totally took me off guard. It was like, that's it. That's I'm sold.
So was that Triskelion? Was that your first comic work?
No, the first one was Story Cycle.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that one was looking at this, this archetypal, like hero myth or hero story, that's been around for thousands and thousands of years. And it's sort of, you know, still to this day, the basis of a lot of films and stories and comics, you know, the same sort of narrative arc that a hero goes through. So I was looking at it rather, it's usually a single male character who's heterosexual and goes on this journey. So I was looking at it from the perspective of nine different female characters from myth and fairy tale. And going
so there's
through,
like Little Red Riding Hood and all this.
And the Little Mermaid and Lilith, who's the mythical first wife of Adam, who divorced him.
Of course she did.
Yeah.
He's a horrible husband.
Yeah, I would think so. just me all the time.
Hanging out with that snake.
I know. Yeah. So, what do we do today? I don't know. I'll just be naked. Yeah.
There's an apple on offer. You know.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah, so it was looking, sort of taking my favorite characters from myth and fairy tale and sort of placing them in the position of these, this hero story. And I did, I don't know, it was, so it was a comic, like printed up, like a you know, like it's like a 48 page comic. And then it was, exhibited as this, all of the paintings that were the pages, like in sequence. So we had our big opening for our degree show. And people were, you know, milling about looking at the work, and they would just sort of, you know, slowly yet politely walk past all of the paintings on the walls. And then they would get to the comic and they would actually stand and read it and pay attention to the art. And it was like,
this says
something,
doesn't it? Yeah.
This absolutely says something about, you know, I don't know, this that very intimate human relationship to your book.
Yeah.
And it's your own little world that you're engaging with. And even if you're in sort of a bus or a crowded gallery or whatever, you're having that moment with your, with the art or with a comic.
Yeah. So it's, it's a communication between the reader and the art, isn't it? In more in different, maybe different ways from.
And the reader really has, I mean, like the reader has a lot of control, you know, they decide when, you know, how fast, you know, you decide how fast you're going to read it. You decide if you can't be arsed looking at that page. And you know, if you can stuff it in your backpack if you want to, you can dump your tea on it if you want to. Like, it's your book. It's your moment, I guess.
Now, I noticed at the start of that book, you use a technique which you use a lot, and that's you don't always draw on plain paper, do you? I mean, you've been known to sort of draw on maps and on prose pages and on a calendar in one case. Well, how did that come about?
That was, I mean, there's definitely, the fear of the blank page.
Right. I totally understand that.
The blank writing page or the beautifully stretched gessoed canvas or the gorgeous watercolor paper that that you can just see the price tag in the back of your head. Once you've cut it down. And sometimes you just look at it and you're just like, not feeling up to it. So grab a map or some newspaper or something. And it just sort of, part of it is definitely like breaking down that intimidation factor. Another thing is just like playing with, you know, with materials and I don't know, just like trying things out.
In Anatomy of a Broken Heart, the art and the prose underneath almost become a collaboration.
It's just like an incidental thing. That was fun. Cause I was really trying to, the Anatomy of the Broken Heart, I was really exploring that sort of space of having a broken heart. And then I bought this anatomy book.
Right.
That was like a child's textbook about anatomy. and took a knife to it, because that was productive rather than taking a knife to the thing that had broken my heart.
That's genius. Yeah.
And then it becomes like, I don't know, it's the format becomes kind of an interesting thing to play with. Like, it's an anatomy book and it's not.
So in that, for people who don't know, basically you've got pages of, is it Dante's Inferno, is it? And Lewis Carroll's Wonderland. Yeah.
And Alice in Wonderland, yeah.
Yeah. And so what were you doing over the top of that in that comic, Catherine?
I was just taking a knife to stuff.
That's the quote of the episode.
Yeah.
It's Dante's Inferno and Alice in Wonderland and my own sort of letters from having a broken heart and trying to work through it and sort of pasted on top of this book of trying to explain to children what, you know, how the heart works and how the lungs work. So I was like cutting out all these illustrations of the heart or the skeletons and scribbling on top of them or sort of, I don't know.
And you draw on it as well. And there's certain pages that are sort of crinkled and dyed for the underneath to come through and stuff like that. Is there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like cutting out sections of the book and putting in, like tracing paper or painting over top of them. And then, so it is like an actual book. I mean, I have it on my shelf, like the original thing. And then when it was finished and I scanned it all and, you know, got it ready for printing. Cause that was another thing about the fine art world, was, you know, creating all of these unique objects that are one of a kind that have to live under glass, or that you can't actually read this book because it's going to fall apart. But if you turn it into a comic, then you can read it and it's okay.
And I take it you still have the originals anyway, if you wanted to exhibit them. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I often think that a lot of art can be treated like that. I'd love to get by prints of certain paintings, but you just can't get them, can you? Okay. So where did this... did anyone influence you in regards to this sort of work? Is there anyone...
I sort of... Like, we just have a running joke about Dave McKean, but yes,
I was about to say Dave. I'm a big fan of Dave's work. I think he's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, he does just sort of like get repetitive and you just have to laugh at him and you're like, oh, you know, he raided the cutlery drawer again. Like, Mrs. McKean's going to be pissed. Like, where is his clock? But yes, no, he's obviously quite a big influence. And the other one is David Mack, in particular, Kabuki. I remember getting that, like, my first year of at uni and just being like, fuck. I just want to, like, break all my brushes.
I'll never forget when David Mack did Daredevil and he created... Yeah. Who was the character,
Echo.
Yeah.
And I like the way all three of us said that. That's like comedy without
Echo. But I remember I was getting Daredevil at that point and just watching those, you know, looking at those pages, I was like, no one is doing this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
With the mainstream sort of, you know, a superhero book, you know, that kind of book. It just blew my mind, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And Story Cycle, the cover to that really reminded me, without you just saying it, even before you said it just then, I thought that's very... In his style, I'm not saying you've copied him, but it's very much his style in that that sort of soak into the page watercolor style that he does, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That he used to. He's a bit lazy now.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Well, I can't really say anything
Get you mean with the intimidation of the blank page, because I find the artists who do all the comic on one page, so they're like, fucking hell, how do you even do that? So kind of having like the page already worked on by being another media is a great way of taking that forward.
Yeah.
And if there's, you've got like the hidden, what that's saying with your art on top. So I've never done that. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
You do. It's fun. And then if you have to throw it away, it's all right. Cause it's just a piece of newspaper.
Hmm. Yeah.
Just like, all right.
By doing that method, have you ever overworked a page to the point of you have to scratch, you know, just start again?
I always try to, like, I mean, like, sometimes I teach art and one of the things I try to tell people is, like, one of your most important tools is the trash can. Just like nobody, no one has to know.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah,
just like... just let us know where your dustbins are, Catherine. Next time, next time I'm north of the border, I might.
I
don't know how masters work, but would you did you have to sort of say to a tutor saying, like, "I want me to do a comic," and how was the reception to that? You saying that?
Would you like to guess?
not positive.
Not positive at all. Yeah, there was a lot of trying to convince me to do other things, and a lot of me or them giving me reasons why I should not be doing a comic, and me answering those reasons and them not caring. And then at the very end, at, during my sort of degree assessment, I got accused of just being interested in making money, because obviously that's what people who get into making comics, indie comics, are in it for.
Yeah, lucky. We're all making big bank here.
How can anyone make that claim in art circles? It seems ridiculous to me.
It really was.
Yeah, it brings into mind, that's people's perceptions of a certain media art form, isn't it? And certainly, like, comics over the past, like, 10, 20 years have certainly come more into the mainstream. So everyone thinks, as soon as you say to anyone, oh, I make a comic or I work on a comic, they immediately think that you're making loads of money, like selling all these copies. You're, like, you're working for Marvel, you know.
Right, I presume
they mean commercial. You're looking to do your art to make money from it, and you kind of got that.
I think they were really, there was definitely pushback against the idea of, I want to make lots of cheap art, basically. Like, I would rather somebody be able to have one of my comics for £4 that has 28 pages of art in it than sell a single painting for £4,000 that just hangs in one person's home.
So everything they told us in Art School Confidential is true.
That's I mean, when I hear that, that sort of frustrates me, though. That, like,
it does,
And also to the point of, like, isn't the point of art people should be able to do what, like, creatively inspires them, whatever art that is? So to, in some ways, for an art teacher to say, you shouldn't do that, did that inspire you more, no, I'm going to do this?
Well, I don't know if inspired is the right word. It's more like, well, fuck you then.
It's more like claim of, like, making the money off it. That, I just find that utterly bewildering.
Yeah, it was.
How can you even say that?
Like, they're just jealous.
Was that students or staff?
No, that was my, that was one of my tutors.
Oh, wow. Okay.
To my face in front of everyone during my final critique.
Oh, God. It's brutal, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder how people take that, you know, especially in the last couple of years, people are very sensitive around everything, aren't they? I always hear about these critiques in art schools being, like, really sort of ferocious, and I often wonder how some people can take it. I certainly wouldn't. I'd end up laying the geezer out.
We had that, look, only at a university level, but, like, you would have your work on the wall, and then they'd come round, and basically the tutor would... tear strips off people if they hadn't bothered or it wasn't up to much. Yeah, it was just kind of like, it was like a stand-up set, you know, like a particularly vicious comic, and someone gets up for a pee in the middle of the act. And they sort of dog piles them, and then, but basically everyone has a turn.
Bloody hell.
And I don't want people who are listening to this either, Catherine, to think that your work is purely like that, because one of the things I admire about your comics is you switch, don't you? You switch styles. There's quite a few that are perhaps more traditionally drawn in panels, etc., aren't there?
No, I like, I don't know, I do that because I would get bored.
Right, okay.
Same thing.
And I know a comic of yours I reviewed, I think was in Sliced actually, was the one about immigration laws, is that right?
Yeah.
So that was almost a combination. That was drawn in panels, but was it drawn on lined paper, as I recall?
Yeah, I think the one you're thinking about was drawn on grid paper,
Grid paper, yeah. How did, why did you make that choice? Was it thematically sort of the grid paper, was that to signify something, or did you think, oh, this is... You know, why go that way with it?
I mean, yeah, part of it was the like scared of the white page syndrome. Part of it was, I mean, it's quite literal, but like feeling extremely boxed in, and my life was, our life was sort of so rigidly set by regulations and things that we couldn't do, and, you know, sort of narrow, very narrow parameters within.
So you've done it on almost sort of government style paper, haven't you? For those that don't know, you moved to Scotland, didn't you, from America? And was that story about your experiences in dealing with the sort of red tape over here, was it? Or
yes there's actually like a whole, I think there's maybe five of them in total, series of what it was like to attempt to get a visa to stay in the UK, which is absolutely brutal. You know, after my so I got a student visa, after that sort of expired, everything, my husband is Scottish, so everything we had to go through just to live in the same country.
Right. Yeah.
Because of current sort of UK visa laws. Yeah. And it did involve us needing to move to Germany just for 6 months to sort of set up ourselves as EU residents and to get all of that, all of my German paperwork as an EU resident. And then we had to reapply to come back to the UK because I'm a resident of the EU now legally for the next 5 years.
I see.
And then we had to reapply to come back into the UK. And then that process, and then
I was going to say, couldn't he go to America? But I'm going to say that's probably even more difficult these days, isn't it?
It was a long process, and would have taken I think there's only one embassy in the UK in London where you can be processed. So you have to sign up for multiple interviews with at the US embassy, and it could be multiple interviews, and it was just like a whole sort of open-ended process that we weren't. It was like it could take 6 months, it could take 9 months.
So do you enjoy that sort of diary comic thing, do you, Catherine? Is it, do you find it cathartic?
It was absolutely cathartic. It's almost like meditating on like where, I don't know, just like asking yourself, how are you, or where are you at right now? And then, you know, the script comes like quite quickly, and, you know, the actual word length of a comic script is quite small, but then you're spending time drawing and just sort of meditating on something. And it is quite cathartic. And when it's finished, then you just like close, it's like you close the book.
It's quite a zen, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah,
getting it all down on paper, I think.
What is your script process like for your pages then? Because certainly with a lot of your books, that the art and the storytelling will vary quite a bit from page to page, but there's also a very thought out process to how a page is designed. But how do you tell the narrative in a script?
I guess the advantage of doing the art and the writing yourself is that you can just go on your own chicken scratch and like, I know what I'm talking about, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I just tend to write the scripts first. They tend to be pretty stream of consciousness, especially when doing like a shorter comic or like a diary comic.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be quite stream of consciousness, walk away from it, edit it down for clarity, and then put in the breaks for pages, basically, like these words are going on page one, and then just take it from there, and then just do the layouts based on those page breaks. And then for Triskelion, which was like a much longer work,
I was gonna ask about that.
I was sort of, I would do like this, there's like some academic writing in Triskelion, so that's what I would do first for each issue.
Okay.
And then I would plot out the story, just like the story outline, and then do the script for the pages sort of in sequence. And then most of the time it would just be like, okay, page one, this is the and then write the dialogue, and this is what the art's going to be like, and then just let the art sort of respond to the story as I felt like it needed to.
Yeah.
I really
like that book of yours.
It's, yeah,
and the formats and style and layouts you play with on that are really, really good.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a page now, which is it's almost like the skull and tusks of an animal, That divides the page up into four panels.
Oh, I love
beautiful
that.
Stuff,
okay,
mate.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
It's a book that also makes me feel really lazy about my own work. Because I'll look at pages and I think there's so much going on here, but not just in like the story of what's going on, but like the methods you use, like from watercolours to collage. And like you're saying, you've written out bits to then paste onto the page, etc. There's so much going on. And testament to you, it's still completely readable.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, still a page turner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did
it.
Yeah. Success. No, it's cracking stuff. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, certainly there are pages, me and Tony have said this, that I can quite imagine that in a frame on a wall.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Thanks. And some of them are.
Like, ah, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Some of them are given to, like, my family. Or yeah. My friends, or some of them are sold, and then some of them are just on my wall.
Do you find that that's part of the enjoyment of it, is the instinctual side? Because I find you an instinctual drawer, so
yeah.
There's nothing clinical about your books. They're readable, but it seems to be like you go with how you feel. Is that part of why you do it?
I think that's absolutely fair. And I think that's like, I don't know if that's the beauty of, I guess, where I'm at with my career or anything. Like, I'm just like an independent comic creator. So I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want. That's fine. And also because, I mean, I feel like I haven't been making comics very long. I feel like I'm still learning. So by doing every page differently, or by playing around with things, like I'm trying to learn, or I'm testing, or I'm experimenting.
Yeah. I mean, you do play with, you do return to certain themes, don't you? I'll run through a few. I've made a note of.
Yeah. You didn't expect that.
Now I'm going to say this is probably Scotland playing with you, but there's a little bit of Macbeth, isn't there? You've played with Macbeth.
Oh yeah. But that's pre-Scotland. That's like 13-year-old super grunge, like angry me who just wanted to read Shakespeare and everyone else is an idiot. And yeah, that's been around much before Scotland.
And then from there to Cats. You love a cat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it Wall Cats you did? I particularly like that. Was in Magpie, wasn't it?
Yeah, Wall Cats was in Magpie. I think there's also Space Cats in Magpie.
There's a page of Space Cats on your website that I absolutely adore.
That's the one with Data. Is that the one with Data in it?
Data's in it, and there's also one with just a cat floating in space and with Ripley in it.
That's it. Yeah.
Ripley and Jonesy are in it, and Cats. I think. Partially because my husband is allergic to cats, and I love cats. So the only way I can get my hands on a cat.
Because it's almost like there's the Wall Cats, for those who haven't read it, is almost you looking out your window at cats sort of sitting on walls in a suburban cityscape to me. And it's almost, I can see what you're saying now, you're almost longingly looking at these cats.
Yeah.
You seem happy, you know?
Yeah. It seems like she's quite sensitive about the subject.
Yeah. I am.
So can we all name Data's cat and Ripley's cat?
Data's cat was Spot.
Yeah.
Like, correct.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, Ripley.
It wasn't originally Ripley's cat, was it? It was the engineer's.
Yeah.
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 Do you know? Because I know.
I know.
Go on.
Who's going to go?
It's Jonesy.
Jonesy, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember now. In that classic scene before he gets taken out,
Jonesy's quite cold, as most cats are. Like when he sees kind of his owner, friend, whatever, get torn to pieces in front of him, it's just a shot of his face looking impassive.
to be honest, Dan, what are you going to do? You know.
Yeah. I think that's just cats all over. Yeah.
I think the director tried to get him to act, but I don't think it was working.
Come on, Jonesy, put more into it. Come on, you feel. you're feeling right now.
He did have him hissing in the scene before.
Yeah.
And that was just like, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other one I was going to say is obviously myths. And sort of magical, from the past. So things that have existed and you sort of rework them. Yeah.
Yes.
Did you do sort of history or anything like that, or was
I'm just a nerd.
Right. Okay.
I just like history, and I like reading about history, and yeah. I sort of have my own sort of magical practice or witchy practice that I
right.
do.
Okay.
So that's sort of where that comes from. But yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
What's your favorite myth?
What's my favorite myth?
Yeah.
Jeez, at the moment, maybe.
Yeah, right. At the moment, yeah.
Right at the moment, yeah. At the moment, I sort of circled back to I really like Fox Wives stories, which are coming out of they usually come out of Japan, which is and it's like a sort of young man, who's usually poor and whatever, and he marries this mysterious, beautiful woman, and it turns out that she's a fox.
That old chestnut.
Yeah, that was just and it's usually sort of a story about how he discovers her, secretly, or like
going through his bins.
She's getting dressed and her shadow has a fox head or something, cast on the wall.
Oh, that's funny.
And then even though she is, she loves him or they are in love, then she gets sort of chased off and run off because she's a fox.
Isn't that just a metaphor for the fact that your partner isn't who you always thought they were? Do you think, or is that?
Could
is that
be,
where...
or it could just be that don't trust women. Women are terrible, and all those lovely misogynistic things.
Yeah, Brother Lawrence used to tell me that at school. I never believed him. Yeah.
We just want to say that the Awesome Comics Podcast did not make that statement, and we do not stand by it.
Please do not attack that. Yeah. We love everyone. Yeah. The other one I wanted to ask you about, Catherine, my last one is. You did a story about sitting behind a convention table and watching people pass by, which we found, I found like, bearing in mind, we do a lot of conventions behind the table, very true to life. Mm. Where was that? Where was that from? What convention was that?
Oh, that's every convention, honestly. Okay.
Right.
We sort of noticed that right away. You just stand behind a convention table all day and people just tell you stuff. They just tell you stories. A lot of the time it's really touching and it's really special because they're reading my comic and they'll see a page and it'll remind them of something that, whatever. And they'll want to tell you about it. And I think obviously coming from this snobby, for lack of a better word, fine art world and then going into comics, I mean, going to my first convention was as a, a comics creator was amazing because everyone was so happy and excited. And just
not less Polonex as well. No, fewer Polonex and berets and things.
And there was not if people liked my work, they would just be like, oh, this is great. I don't know what it is. What is it? And just like enthusiasm was just so refreshing.
Were you nervous about that? Before even releasing your first comic, the reaction that.
Oh sure. Yeah. Am I nuts for doing this? Will anybody understand or like this?
Yeah. Did you have a certain fear that the comics community, in inverted commas, would view your work in a certain way, whereas it's been more positive than you thought?
No, not really. I mean, just because there already exists sort of a few examples of comics that look like mine, Dave McKean's already making his bank. And David Max already.
And I would say some Eddie Campbell as well reminds me a little bit of your work at times, Yeah.
And on my sort of cohesive days, a bit of Glenn Dillon I can sort of see in the distance that I'm going to be like it when I grow up.
Mm. Yeah. Did you start conventioning in America or was it when you got over here or?
No, it was only when I got over here because I only did my first comic when I got over here.
Okay.
So I think the first one I really did was MCM Glasgow, which was just
oh my God.
Into the deep end.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, we've dived right into the deep end of Freaksville there, haven't we? Let's face it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was amazing, and it's great. It was great, and I had it was awesome.
Now, I can't imagine there's many creators in Well, you're east coast of Scotland, aren't you? So
yeah.
Is there much of a community where you are? I know there's a little bit going on in Edinburgh and Glasgow, but...
No. I mean, there's a bunch of comic stuff, creators, and obviously the comics course goes on in Dundee, which is just like, you know, the next...
Well, that's sort of... ground zero for comics in the UK. Right. Historically, you know, there's a Desperate Dan statue, isn't there? You know?
Yes.
So, yeah.
So I do know a bunch of folks, like, you know, in and around Dundee. That's just the next town over. And I've actually was very, very sort of feeling very hashtag blessed to have taught on the comics course during the fall semester at DJCAD, which was just amazing. And I would love to keep doing stuff like
that.
What did
you teach? What sort of stuff were you teaching there? Or
Well, they have just a comics sort of module. So I was there helping, and the students have just a simple assignment. You know, they have to do their own short comic, six to eight pages over the semester. So I was just coming in and, like, you know, doing like one-to-one, like, let's talk through your story and your comic and, you know, what are we doing? And then I was also trying to tell them about, you know, what it's like to be out in the world and going
starving.
To cons and, starving. And, you know, like, how do you talk about your work at conventions, and also trying to tell them to take care of themselves because nobody does that in art school.
Right. Like, interesting. Yeah.
Eat a vegetable, damn it, and stretch your back and you're worth more than your productivity kind of thing.
Yeah. I get you. Yeah.
So there, and then they have, I think it gets released in April, like an anthology of all the work that they
created. Yes, I've seen it a couple of times, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then they asked me to do the cover for it. So,
really?
Okay. So, yeah, so keep an eye. It's called, I think it's called Anthology 8. So if you see it around, like, those are my children, and I will murder anybody who says anything bad about
it. Bad about, of course, yeah.
Teach any students to get involved with the, is it Soltar comic? There was a student.
Yeah.
There's one or two that went on to do that.
Yes. No, but I've not taught any of those guys.
Okay.
Okay. So have you ever done any...
D-Common.
I know, other than the MCM, have you done any of the sort of... I'm going to say, we call it the artier side of comic conventions here, for want of a better term.
Yeah, over there, like Thought Bubble, I did that like last year, and I'm going again this year.
Mm. Oh, do you? Oh, we must have missed you at that, yeah. Oh, yeah. We were at that, yeah.
So we should find each other when we're there, when I'm down there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Thought Bubble is great. And then there's Glasgow Comic Con, there's D-Con in Dundee, I'm doing Dunfermline Comic Con.
Oh, that's soon, isn't it? Is that the
week? Yeah, the 3rd of March.
Yeah, yeah.
And
hear good things about that.
We have done, haven't we?
It's great.
Yeah.
It's a great con. It's a great con. And it's like they raise money for charity. So
always good. Mm.
Yeah.
I've noticed that Scotland is the new sort of burgeoning area for comic cons, isn't it? Certainly over the past like 2 years.
Definitely.
Yeah, there's loads. There's even one in like Fort William.
Yeah.
There is, isn't there? I've heard about that one. Fort William's gorgeous as well. It's an amazing part of the country. Yeah.
Yeah, we did it once and it was like but you almost like felt bad, like we went all the way up to Fort William and then we were like in the convention hall all day. It was like,
I know what you mean.
Go out for lunch and just like, damn it.
That's the problem with conventions, isn't it? You go to different cities and different places, but you rarely see them.
You're just behind your table.
I've been to Cheltenham 4 times now and I've only been to the convention corner at the race course. I've never actually seen any other bit of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And most of the convention, Catherine, is spent with me having to stare into Vince's eyes, telling him he's okay.
Look, you love it. So, when it came to comics and stuff, obviously you've been involved with the course teaching comics, but what were some of the biggest learnings that you had going from that sort of fine art world to putting together an actual comic? You know, the setup of the pages, the press, you know, the press PDFs, bleed and stuff. Was it a big learning or was it quite easy to pick up?
Yeah, I mean, it was, obviously not very digitally inclined. So learning all of that sort of publishing end of things was a learning curve, and lettering is still something that I'm like, I think I have it, but I don't really sort of, so I would say lettering, getting stuff set up for print. But the biggest learning curve or the biggest shock from switching to comics was how much work they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Like how work intensive, the process is to make like a little comic, and you do sort of, you know, like each issue of Triskelion would take me 6 months to do. And then get back from the printers and, oh, it's great. And then I'd like flick through it in like 10 minutes and just have that like moment of existential. You sound like people who know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well,
I find the best way to do that is get on a podcast for a couple of years with people who know what they're talking about.
You
have to do that bit of it. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's weird because we're mentioning later on, but we've had a couple of reviews coming in because you get the process of kind of doing the comic, then you get it printed, you come back and see it. And then if you send it out for reviews and wait for those reviews to come in, and there's a couple of times where we've had reviews in, and I've sort of waited an hour or so before reading or listening to it.
Yeah.
I kind of got to get myself ready for that.
I don't it's nice when you get a nice one, but if I think we haven't had any bad ones, but if I got a bad one, I could just go, whatever, they don't understand, and walk away. You've almost got to convince yourself for that, do you think?
I mean, I was once like you. I was once trying to convince myself that I wouldn't care, but I did.
I saw on Twitter, Stephen Byrne, the artist, at Stephen Byrne 86. He did 10 points recently. That I made sure I took a screenshot of and retweeted about, like, working on comics or just anything in general. And one of them was like, spend as much effort promoting your work as you do creating it.
I hate that though.
I know. I think everyone hates, because I feel like you have to keep sometimes putting out the same tweet or the same social media post. And I hate being that guy. And because I don't like doing it, I probably lose the people that might have seen that post later. So do you sacrifice pissing off the few people that see all your tweets for the you know, the people that will only see one important one? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We was talking just before we came online, and we won't mention the title, but they said they're not going to do any kind of advertising on social media and kind of online, which is just bonkers.
Yeah, you can't do it.
It's just people won't find what you're selling. They won't see it. And you're creating this stuff for people to read and look at and enjoy.
Yeah.
And if it's not getting into an audience...
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what every comic creator wants, don't they? They want their stuff to be read and enjoyed and get...
Yeah, definitely.
You're giving out.
Absolutely.
And I wonder for you, Catherine, as well, because you're... Some of, not all of it, but some of your work is very personal, isn't it? Very autobiographical.
Yeah.
And it's almost... doubled the anxiety you must feel putting it out there, because not only are you wondering what they think of the comic, but there's a certain part of you must be thinking, I wonder what they'll think of me.
I mean sometimes, like, part of it is it's cathartic, and once it's written out and the comic is made, then it's like outside of me, and it's not you know, like, it's a bit gone. And then every once in a while, I'll like go back or reread something that I've written and put out in the world and be like, "Oh shit! Like, but what?"
There must be those moments though where you have to almost not relive it, but you know, when people pick up a book and they say, "What's this about?" then, and rather than say, "Oh, my book's about aliens fighting each other," you have to then talk about, you know, something that may have upset you for quite some time.
Yeah.
Have you had any moments like that?
Or like sometimes at a convention, you're talking to somebody who's read your work that I wrote when I was quite depressed or had a broken heart, and they'll want to say, like, you know, that it meant something to them, like they felt that way too, and you just like that's one of the most amazing things for somebody to say to you. But I also like don't know what to say.
No, it's very difficult.
And he's I know what that felt like because I wrote it. Like, I'm sorry you had to experience that too.
Yeah. But also, you must get that on parts where you've moved so far on from that experience, like a good few years, that when people say that, you're in a different headspace, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or you just want to be like, ah, I'm better now.
But then again, what would we get that's great fiction and great writing? You know, if people didn't do that, I think sometimes, you know, we wouldn't have Joyce, wouldn't have Bukowski, wouldn't have anyone, would we? If we didn't write, I mean, I know Bukowski at one point said, write angry. And I thought, well, that's interesting, you know, because you're writing your emotions on a page, it's got to have an effect, isn't it? Yeah.
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 Yeah. Interesting.
Mm. But yeah. The thing of a stranger coming up to you and they've got this kind of insight into your life or the things you've gone through, and said, I've gone through that too. That's kind of relative, quite intimate with a complete and utter stranger that's come relatively unbidden into your life. Yeah. It must be a very strange experience.
Yeah, it's strange and I don't know, it's not bad strange.
No,
but no. It's just like I don't. I almost like my first instinct is to just be like, I'm sorry. Like,
isn't it all about translating one thing into another? The whole of art is one thing translated, isn't it? So it's an emotion made to a painting, or it's a it's an action made into into a story. Is the translation is that, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. I mean, certainly, I think art as a therapeutic medium is a very it's a brilliant thing and a very interesting concept. And it becomes even more interesting when it comes to comics, because it's not like, I felt, this happened to me and I've written it down on a piece of paper or I've painted something and it's just for me to help me, deal with this situation. When you're making a comic of it, you're also doing it to put it out into the masses, which,
Or maybe you are. Yeah.
Maybe.
If you create comics... in a sense, and as soon as you put them on the table, you're creating something for other people to pick up. And
as you make that mental decision, this is going to get printed. It's an impetus to do stuff as well. Yeah. That I think,
But the message of sort of saying, if you're breaking up with a partner and you're putting that into a single painting that's open to kind of interpretation, where the comic is going to be a lot more not hand holding, but it's more of a narrative do you see what I mean?
No, it's spelled out and it's a sustained, it's 72 pages worth of being upset.
But also it really sort of it's very therapeutic for those readers that like get attached to it and they follow that across and it touches them. It touches them in a way that maybe a singular painting won't, because a singular painting will evoke a certain type of feeling. But if you're telling a story or, some moment, and they can be like, oh, that happened to me, that exact sort of moment kind of happened to me. It's a very different kind of feeling. This is the most highbrow we've been.
It is. We've never been this highbrow ever. Will you bring that happens, Catherine?
No.
Yeah. I'd say the other thing, following on from what we're talking about there, is I mean, I found your work affecting and interesting and emotional. But then I found you did a story, you collaborated with someone over a story about someone being obsessed with their ex-boyfriend. Was that one of them?
Yeah, that was Ray. I can't remember. I think she just put a call out on Twitter and I replied. She did like an anthology sort of a bunch of different shorts of her writing, sort of going through this breakup. And it's just like so she liked her work and
for people who haven't read it, it's I mean, it's extremely personal. It's the it's the thought process of what you do from moment to moment. So it's almost like, right, I haven't checked his Facebook for a week, and then I pissed myself I wouldn't, and I did, and it's very insightful. Yeah, was that all written when it came to you, or was it written especially for you, that part? Or
she just gave me her piece. Yeah, I think that's okay. How it works. She had it written, and she thought that my work would be good for that section.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah. She didn't break down it for you or anything like that.
Oh no. She actually sort of it was just the prose, and she just said, here, you go for it. And it was actually very, very similar to how I write myself.
Okay.
So she was asking me, like, do you want something more broken down or more structured? And I was like, no. Like, this is perfect. Just the prose. And she really, I mean, it was amazing working with her. We just sort of clicked right away, and she just sort of trusted me and let me go with it and sort of make those decisions.
Have you met her since, person to person, or...?
No, she lives in Chicago.
Right, okay. So you sort of social media, email,
Skype, and that's it.
Okay. Is that something you'd like to do more of, collaborate with someone? Did you find it an interesting stretch to do a bit?
I'm going to segue. Can I segue?
Of course you can, yeah.
Actually, my next big comic project is a collaboration with somebody who is writing. It actually sort of did. It did get announced. I wasn't sure if it was going to be announced yet, but my next giant project is like a full length, like 150-page graphic novel, all about the magical Battle of Britain and Dion Fortune and how to fight Nazis with magic.
Oh, okay, right.
And I'm the artist. I'm working.
Can you say who the writer is, or?
Yeah, Bobsy, Bob Keery. He is he does a lot of podcasting. If people know him from there. He does like an amazing Twin Peaks podcast called Diane.
Oh, wow. Love Twin Peaks.
If you're into Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Well, then you should listen to Diane. It's an excellent podcast.
Yeah.
So he does that. He is also one of the Mindless Ones.
I have listened to his stuff. Yeah, I've listened to the Mindless One.
Yeah. Okay. So you know Bobsy. We sort of got onto it. I think he was doing another podcast about talking about sort of Nazi magic and fighting back against Nazis with sort of magical practices. And I just sort of tweeted him and was like, hey, what do you think about actually making a comic about this? Maybe I should back up. The magical Battle of Britain is happened during the Battle of Britain, just about 80 years ago. Mm-hmm. So basically what happened was sort of spearheaded by this one lady called Dion Fortune. Excuse me. So when World War II was looming, she sort of organized all of the like magical people, occult thinkers, all these esoteric weirdos all across Britain, and did weekly meditations and prayer services and sort of guided visualizations to psychically protect the island from the Nazis. Yeah. And whether or not you believe this is effective as a practice, this actually happened and is a part of the history of World War II. And as you may have heard, the Nazis had their own occult wing of operations.
Okay.
So they did have their own wizards. We are doing a comic about this process of trying to protect Britain from Nazis with magic.
That sounds great.
And about her, and about Dion Fortune, and her life, and her sort of magical practice. And we also kind of wanted to put in examples of these letters that she was writing as a how-to guide for readers. Because, unfortunately, in this year of our Lord, 2018, it is still necessary to fight Nazis.
Yeah.
We're going to have a spin-off. Spin-off title like Dad's Army of some older ladies having to kind of use
they don't
magic.
Like it up them.
No. These are terrible jokes based on an ancient TV series that you probably haven't seen, Catherine.
Okay. I am aware of the existence of Dad's Army, and I think that is the extent of my knowledge.
I think there was someone posted up today. Tom Mortimer found some Dad's Army fan fiction. Versus some ridiculous, it's like Dad's Army versus Dracula or something.
Oh my god! I'd read a comic of that. Maybe that's just me.
I'm looking out now because someone's done Dad's Army fan fiction for one, and then
I'm doing On the Bus.
Oh, it's even better.
All right,
it's Dad's Army versus Predator.
Yes. No.
Oh god. Oh god. Is it like one page long?
That is amazing. Amazing.
Okay, we'll put that up in the show notes.
No, okay. Yeah. Oh, please. Really? Really? if you send me the link down, I will. That book sounds amazing. So is that the biggest sort of project you've worked on so far? Because that's like 150 pages in one hit, isn't it?
Have you got a publisher for it, Catherine, or are you going to kickstart it?
Basically, we just finished the pitch. So I've just done sort of like all my sample pages and variant covers and stuff like that. And we are out hunting for a publisher as we speak.
There you go, you heard it first.
Publishers.
Yeah.
Get in touch. Yeah,
any publishers out there. Yeah. That's amazing. You've also, I remember you emailed us and you said Throwaway Press.
Yeah.
They're going to be releasing a collected trade of every short you've ever done. Is that true?
Correct. It is the sort of Magpie collected trade. It is going to be out in early March. And Throwaway Press are the very kind gentlemen who also put out Dirty Rotten Comics.
Yeah, so that's their little offshoot, isn't it? And they do. They've done a couple of collected works of people, haven't they? I think this is.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds really good. Yeah. Brill.
And nice. So that will have sort of everything I've ever done. So that includes like Magpie 1 and 2, and then 8 brand new, never before seen short comics.
Cool. Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's a good idea. Yeah, excellent. I should be getting that.
And if that wasn't enough, there's also, you're doing a short for We Shall Fight Until We Win.
Now, correct.
Do you want to, tell us a bit about
that? No rest for the weary.
Yeah,
We Shall Fight Until We Win. So that's a collaboration between BHP Comics and 404 Inc. 404 Inc.
They're Scottish based, aren't they? They're
I think they both are.
I think they did. Did they do Rock of the Reds?
Yes.
With John Wagner and a couple of other books. Yeah, they're really nice people. Actually, I got an email from them this week. Yeah, great people. Yeah.
And then 404 Inc. They sort of had a big boon. They had this wonderful collection of essays called Nasty Women. You may have heard.
I've not heard of that.
Yeah. It was sort of, you know, obviously a response to somebody who's in power, hopefully for not much longer, in America. Do not speak his names. So they're doing a collaboration of, they're celebrating 100 years since some women in Britain got the vote. And it is, celebrating 100 years of women in politics in the UK. It's a bunch of us lady comic creators. Who
are you doing the life of Margaret Thatcher, or is that a...
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds awesome.
Versus Predator.
Yeah. I think a Predator would come off worse there, I've got to tell you.
I don't know. No, I'm doing my BFF, Theresa May, who made my life so easy and wonderful as an immigrant.
I'll tell you after the show, but you and me both, mate, I've got to tell you.
It's a... I'm doing one of the shorts for We Shall Fight Until We Win about an awesome lady in British politics over the past 100 years. And that's Kickstartering right now. I think they've got 10 days left if you want to pre-order. But they've met the goal. So
nice one.
So we'll be out in June, I think.
I mean, I certainly... it looks great, but I certainly hadn't heard of it until you told me about it in the email. So
I know, because BHP wrote to us... last week about something, and they didn't mention that actually. So yeah, I will put that.
So you're going to be quite busy then for quite some time.
I'm always busy.
All right,
I'll do this to myself.
I wasn't suggesting you weren't.
We all give Vince our time. It's fine, yeah. Catherine.
Yeah. It's kind of my job. So that's all you've got coming up. But on the flip side, what comics do you read? What did you like about comics before you even started making comics?
Well, currently I'm reading Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing. And it's
awesome. Is that the first, if you don't mind me asking, is that the first time you've read it? Or?
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
So good. It's so good.
Yeah.
And what have I got picked up recently? Just trying to keep up with Bitch Planet, which is one of my sort of favorite ongoing ones. But I have been graced and gifted sort of a review copy of Paul John Milne's newest comic called Grave Horticulture, and it's coming out soon, and it is amazing. He's an indie sort of creator. He's based in Edinburgh, and I don't know how to describe his work. It looks nothing like mine, I'll give it that, but like in the best possible way. It sort of looks like, if you guys read Copra by...
Yes, I love Copra. Yeah.
Yes. Good. Yeah. So if you can imagine Copra, except the artist is having an acute existential crisis.
Right.
Jesus.
It looks like that.
Copra's nuts enough. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. No. Paul's work is even more nutserer. Yeah.
She created a word. I love that.
I think I was going on about it earlier, but he's printed it on newsprint and it looks amazing and it's insane in the best possible way. But he's definitely someone that I would highly recommend. So Grave Horticulture is coming out soon, but he also has this sort of Top Trumps card game.
Okay.
With sort of like these terrible but wonderful grotesque
figures. I've seen this. Yeah, this is great. Yeah.
Yes. And they just, it's so hard to describe, but you just, you end up like going through this deck of cards and like cackling and being horrified and loving every minute of it.
Right.
So yes. So go look at his work. It's so good.
Amazing. Cool. So is Alan Moore a big influence then on you and on what you
want? Yeah, obviously. Yeah. I mean, you know, I tend to go for less sexual assault, but
yeah. Yeah. Don't read Lost Girls then. Christ. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm all right.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Swamp Thing. I was reading it when it came out, and I reread it regularly. And they bought out those really nice hardback. Is that what you're reading it from? Or?
No, I'm just sort of grabbing the paperback, and they have, it's not even like glossy paper, it's even sort of like newsprinty paper, but I kind of like it. Yeah. But no, I mean, like, I say that with like tongue in cheek, but yeah, he's like, it's like Papa Allen, and then like, you know.
Have you read any of the Len Wein, Bernie Wrightson stuff that predates it?
No.
That's incredible as well. As good, I think.
As good,
incredible. Yeah, have a look at that stuff if you get a chance.
Yeah, that's something that not enough people say that as well either, do they? Because people always talk about Swamp Thing and they just think Alan Moore.
Yeah.
But
in the Bernie Wrightson and Len Wein stuff, he meets aliens and it's real Bronze Age 70s craziness. It's just amazing just to look at, you know. Yeah, really good. Yeah, Alan Moore takes a lot from it. I'm taking nothing from his Swamp Thing run because I loved it as well. Mm. And that run continues to the end to be great, I think, all the way through like 100 issues. Really good. Yeah.
How many issues?
I think it went up to 130 or something, did it?
Yeah, something ridiculous. Yeah. Something like 5 or 6 trades.
Yeah. And I think Mark Miller does a run and different writers come and go on it when Alan leaves. But yeah, still very interesting. He goes to Mars. Have you had him go to Mars yet on that?
No, spoilers.
Yeah, that's really good. That's a really good moment. Yeah. Yeah. And then of course from that you can jump onto Hellblazer as well, can't you, and read some of that. So that's equally as good. Yeah.
Blimey. That's the second week in a row we've mentioned Swamp Thing on this show.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. But thank you for joining us this week, Catherine. You're sticking with us for the rest of the show and listening to the rest of our nonsense, so we really appreciate it. But just for those people who are interested by your work right now, and I'll get you to give them the link again at the end of the show, but where can people get your work?
Well, you can get my work on Comic House, your lovely sponsor. So I'm on the app, so you can read my stuff, all my stuff digitally, and you can also order all my stuff through Comic House. I'm on Twitter. It's Withryn, so Withryn. I'm on Tumblr at S Publications. I'm on the Facebook, Catherine Briggs Comics, and my website. I'll spell out Catherine because it's everybody spells it differently. It's KatherineBriggs.com.
Cool.
Nice. And what's the next show you're going to be at?
Dunfermline Comic Con on the 3rd of March.
There you go. And is that when you have the collected trade of Magpie?
I hope so. I think so. That's what we're aiming for. But we will hopefully have it then, and I'll definitely have it for DCon, which is on the 7th of April. That's in Dundee.
Oh, cool.
Amazing.
And I know that Throwaway you have a table at LCAF every year, so I should think it will also be on their table if you're London based. It should be on their table in which I think is about the end of June sometime. I think LCAF off the top of my head. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. So there's plenty of ways you can get hold of Catherine's work. So you have no excuse, people. There you go. Well, we always threaten our listeners with
a That's comment. Good. That's just a good policy.
Yeah.
Getting there first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So do we have any shout outs this week, folks?
Yeah, I've got a few.
We've got a few this week, haven't we?
Yeah, I've got a number.
Myself and Vincent there were stars. I think best describes as stars of the Lakes podcast this week, weren't we?
Oh, yes. Hell yeah.
I was a bloody legend, darling.
I only swore once. And,
the thing that got me about you swearing, though, was the fact that it wasn't an off-the-cuff remark. It was something you actually had wrote down. So there's no excuse for it, Tony.
I thought you guys did really well. I really enjoyed listening. I enjoyed that podcast anyway, but that was a really nice segment. Yeah.
No, thank you to Ian and Nikki of the Comic Art Podcast.
They're good for having us on.
Yeah.
worst thing about that one is I didn't realise we were recording when we first started chatting, and then it all went out, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it all went out.
Yeah, it could have been far worse, Tony.
God. Yeah.
That was good, though. It kind of like, yeah, it was like off the cuff, and then suddenly it went into it, and it was like,
yeah.
Well, I don't think they realised that this was going out.
Yeah. They're a good little show, though, and they love their comics. Good and fun. They highlight some books that certainly they highlight stuff that we haven't read or looked at.
So, definitely.
If you want to get the full spread of indie comics, don't
worry. They reviewed Awesome Comic Issue 1 as
yes,
well.
Yes, they did. They liked it, so we're well pleased. Yeah.
I quite like the Viper review. He said that's quite offensive.
They got that then, did they?
Yeah,
good. Yeah. Yeah, but that's how we like it.
Yeah.
I've got otherwise I've got a couple more. Tom Curry, Mr. Chucklehead himself, I met for a midweek coffee. He made me laugh. He did say he'd been chatting to his wife about playing board games. And he said that he'd been chatting to someone from our podcast, and his wife actually said, "Christ, you've not been talking to Tony, have you?" I thought, "Oh, that's nice." So I shouted at him in Costa Coffee, "Let's play Twister," really loud. I thought it was quite good.
God.
It's good. Good to see him. And then he wandered off and saw Black Panther before me, which I was jealous of, but well, I've seen it now. Yesterday I met up with Susie and Chris Gander. No spoilers. Susie and I are working on a little comic together, so we did a bit of research in London, took some photographs of the place it's set, etc. That was good fun. Yeah.
Nice. Do I need to ask any clues as to the place?
It's the usual place I lampoon, the East End of London. Yeah. Yeah, so we should be lampooning areas of London. But yeah, as usual.
Nice one.
Good fun. Yeah. Anyone else?
I've got a couple of shouts. We got some nice reviews in for the Awesome Comic Issue 1. One from a friend, Kev Cooling. You can read that at weaverpressstudios.co.uk. Yeah, we put the full link in because it is quite huge. Our friends at Pipe Dream and an American podcast.
Yeah, this is nice, isn't it?
Comic Crusaders, Flipside Focus, and it's episode 2.
They're nice guys, aren't they?
Yeah. Really nice guys. Really know what they're talking about. They give the review. Honestly, I listened to a couple of reviews they gave of other comics, and I was like, I wouldn't mind getting that. That sounds good.
Yeah.
And they did us justice on that one. So
Very good.
Cheers, chaps.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. We really appreciate it. We really appreciate anyone and everyone who's picked up the book.
Yeah.
And all the nice feedback we've had. It's very nice. And there's plenty more craziness to come.
And if you want to get a copy, there's currently copies at Destination Venus. If you want to go in a shop and buy one, you can go to Destination Venus in Harrogate. And I sent some up to Dennis Whittle and his shop, and we'll be putting all the putting the locations where you can buy a hard copy in the notes.
Nice.
There you go.
It's be off down the post office today, Monday, when you hear this.
Oh, you're back down there, are you?
There's another load going out.
Nice. But seriously, if you've bought an issue, folks, if you checked out this, please write us a letter for the letters column.
Yes.
There's a reason that, I mean, cause we've had some nice feedback about that letters column, which is quite nice, a bit old school, which is exactly why it's in there. But that exists because we had some great letters from you lovely people. So, read the strips and just send us an email at awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Or tony.awesomecomicspod. That should be the letters one, shouldn't
that's
it?
That's the letters one, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, because I have to write letters replies, don't I?
Yeah. tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Send your letters for inappropriate comments.
That's the name of it, Catherine. Inappropriate comments. That's our letters column. That's nice. Is that something you'd do? We're trying to bring back the letters column. Is that something you'd like to do, Catherine, with some of your books, do you think? Have like a little sort of write to reply to?
That might be interesting. I was thinking about bringing back like back matter, like guest essays and things like that.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Like letters. That would be
quite interesting to use like a letters sort of page or something as a page to work over the top of.
Oh imagine.
We'll lend you some of ours. They're quite insightful.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. If you ever did an updated edition, it was sort of like a couple of people wrote in and said what they thought and how the book helped them, maybe that'd be nice.
Yeah, that would be very nice.
And then I probably wouldn't paint over it. I'd probably just frame it and keep it by my bed.
So if you do want to buy issues of the Awesome Comic, check out the Big Cartel store. We'll put the link in the show notes. But Big Cartel and the Awesome Comic podcast, it will pop up.
We are currently going through that phase of having to constantly shout about this comic.
Yeah. Yeah. We're those embarrassing people who say things like, I've just put my shoes on. By the way, have you bought a copy of?
If you've got shoes.
You know what goes great with shoes?
Do you like bananas? If you do.
I mean, thankfully, because there's three of us, it normally, like, I've seen Tony post up something about it, and I'm like, oh, and that'll inspire me to then.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I always think I won't post one right away because you two have done it, and then don't. And then I'll just retweet your guys. It's a difficult one.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're hard at work with issue two. So
yes, we are. Can't wait for you to see that. I'll be excited.
I've been showing the guys a little bit of work of that.
You said that you were working late last night. I was in my beddy boys when you texted me
Were you in your pyjamas?
Pardon?
Were you in your pyjamas?
I was in my house shorts. Should I just say that?
Oh.
What, your evening trousers?
Yes, yes. I wear a boating blazer.
My sundown pantaloons.
Occasionally, I'll just casually carry a tennis racket. You know.
Gently.
Wife bought me some pajama bottoms, so I don't ever kind of have that. And like just knock around the house in them, like Transformers ones. I was like, heaven forbid anyone comes to the door late at night and I've got them on.
Right.
I told you that story about the police officers coming knocking on the door coming in.
No.
There was like some trouble outside the road and like some kids jumped on the car. So I called the police and kind of over-egged the fact that the damage they had done. And they said, we might send some officers around. So I thought, they probably went and went to bed. And then about an hour later, there was a bang on the door and I came down in my dressing gown, like bleary-eyed. And there were two officers like about 10, 15 years younger than me. A fucking Wally.
Did one of them say, sir, I think you need to tighten the cord on your
Yeah. Damn, so but
that's
just
as far as it closes.
He is the Hugh Hefner of comics.
That's the best description ever.
If you want to find out more about me, I was interviewed on Action A Go Go.
Yes.
So you can go check that out.
Dude.
Which is
in terms of segues.
You can check that out, actionagogo.com. You can just search Dan Butcher and it'll pop up. I talk a bit about...
I tell you what, anytime I search Dan Butcher...
be careful on the links.
Sorry for this puerile humour from my colleagues.
I don't know what happened. I'm sorry.
You turned into me for a second.
I know. I'm better than this.
But yeah, there's stuff on Vanguard and Viper and bits and pieces. So check that out. That's good.
You like the way I said on the other podcast, said make sure you spell it with a Y.
Yeah.
Y. Know that.
Because there's actually another TV series with a car called
there
Viper.
There is, isn't there? Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
And also Penguins. It's their fifth anniversary.
Yay.
Today.
Oh, yay.
They're from up in the neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alan Henderson's good egg.
Yeah. Go and check him out at penguins.tumblr.com.
Yeah.
Well worth it. He loves a pun, so that's always
good.
Yeah.
And he loves the shadow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, because we've all Dan, you've done a shadow commission for him, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got that little gallery in the Awesome Comics Talk.
Yeah.
On Facebook. Check that out. It's got me, Vince,
dude,
Nick.
Turn into an ad.
me, Vince, and Nick.
That's right. Yeah.
Also, artists on the Awesome Comic issue one. Check that out. But we've all shared. we've done our renditions of the shadow.
We've created an animal. We've created some kind of beast.
Do you know what I love about this? You posted on Twitter about half an hour before we were about to do this show that you had loads of notes and stuff.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
It shows.
I was just riffing that last bit. So
bloody hell.
Freestyling.
Oh my God. I've actually got tears in my eyes.
I'm so proud.
So our boy became a man. Yes, cool. What a shout-out section.
That's good. That's the biggest one for ages.
Yeah. Catherine, do you have any shout-outs? Do you want to give anyone a shout-out?
No, I don't want to shout out. I'm going to shout out Bobs, who is writing this comic with me and is like my brother from another mother. So also shout out my husband, who is coughing a lung out in the other room. Bless him. No. We wish him health.
You haven't got you haven't smuggled a cat in, have you?
No, I haven't. I swear. just the five.
Could you not slip some of that antihistamine medication with his drink and then bring a cat in and say, look, you're not allergic anymore?
Oh, look, you're fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I keep threatening to bring home like one of those naked ones.
Oh, the hairless, hairless ones.
Yeah.
But
no.
I almost said the P word there. That'd have been bad. That'd have been something. Oh, Mr.
Dan, come on, you're better than this.
I stopped myself before, even though I'm putting it out now.
No,
makes
but we
a mockery
we
of me not saying it now.
Yeah,
so
no,
it does.
You look foolish, Dan. Unbelievable. You were doing well.
I sound foolish.
Cool to him.
Yeah. No, we do wish him well though, because there's a lot of it going about.
Yeah. He works at a college, so it's just like God. A petri dish.
Yeah.
Oh. And I'll also say like thanks to Pete, who was just like told you guys to invite me on the show.
Oh yeah,
which
yeah.
is nice. Very very nice.
Yeah. There you go. Awesome. He's a good egg.
We would have invited you anyway.
Yeah, we like your stuff. Yeah. That's we were talking about Pete Jean Poole, who is the millionaire who runs Comic House.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Sleeps on comics.
Yeah.
Del Boy of comics.
But oh dear. Anyway, so there you go. I'm sure there's probably a shout out or two that we've forgotten. It normally happens every week.
Yeah.
But I think we did well this week. Dan,
yeah,
you did well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Proud of you.
Bloody hell.
Don't expect me to top that next week.
Oh well.
Back to usual service next
Dan
week.
Dan shout out corner next week.
Yeah. Dan of the year. Anyway, right, recommendations. It's that time of the week now. Catherine has already done a recommendation because
I did. Yes.
Yeah. Which sounds amazing, but you layabouts. What have you got this week?
Well, I've got two. I've got a long one and a little short one. Shall I go first? Shall I bookend?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Okay. So first off, I'm going to do The Mind of James Svengal. Which I picked up at True Believers from this Lyndon White, who did the story and art. Story and script is by Jordan Sam Adams. It's edited by Simon Burks, published by Blue Fox Comics. And it's got an introduction by our pal Lizzie Boyle. This is quite an impressive volume of a book. I think it's been a labour of love for Lyndon. Funny enough, I've written in my notes here, the cover reminds me of a David Mack cover. Which we were just talking about. Have you guys seen this yet? Have any of you guys seen this book?
No.
I picked up some of Lyndon's work at True Believers, but I didn't get that.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of maybe the Punch and Judy book, the cover that Neil Gaiman and Dave McKean did, something like that. It's got that sort of 90s experimental vertigo trade graphic novel kind of feel to it, a little bit like that sort of thing. Really nice. I mean, for me, that's high praise. So it surrounds an artist. It's a story of an artist, and it starts with him. He's waiting backstage to walk out into an audience full of critics and talk to them about an installation that he's done. And he goes out, and he thinks it's going to be a series of pre-prepared questions about the art. But instead, he gets one question about the art that he was expecting. And then one of the critics throws themselves into the fact that he knocked over a girl with his car a few weeks beforehand, and she was still in a coma. So he sort of storms off. He argues with his girlfriend, and then he heads to the tube. And he has this sort of it's a weird book because it talks a lot about, as the title describes, the mind of an artist, and it sort of deals with the sort of anxieties and insecurities and stuff like that he would face. But strangely, the voice of sense and the voice of reason comes from this sort of hobo who sits in the tube station. And he goes to see him sort of regularly and takes him a coffee and stuff. And he's an ex-war vet. And this hobo at one point says to him, hey, kid, you've got to live in the real world, not in your head. And that's kind of a touchstone for the rest of the book, especially for me reading it, I have to say. It became something that you sort of reminded of as you go along. Mm-hmm. And then to reinforce that comment, straight after that comment's made, he goes to his psychiatrist and he talks to his psychiatrist about his dreams. And then... you began to sense that this guy is like incredibly self-centered and sort of selfish and self-indulgent, and he just drones on constantly to anyone who will listen about his life and his relationship problems and the dreams he's having. He heads to an engagement party, and at this engagement party, the couple are literally dancing with each other, celebrating the fact they've become engaged. And he is all he can think about is what people are thinking about him while this is sort of going on. And his wife or his girlfriend, Beatrice, tells him the world doesn't have to revolve around him. And that was a thought that was playing on my mind a lot as I was reading it. So he goes out into the back alley, and he discovers a sort of altercation between two youths in this back alley at the back of this club. And he ends up speaking to one of them and stealing a jar of hallucinogenic pills from him that are sort of described as experimental and a cross between LSD and cocaine. And he takes one. And from that point on, you get a sort of cross between hallucinations and real waking life. And for example, he wakes up believing he's being buried alive by his girlfriend. Sort of tentacles come out of walls. He's walking on a beach and all this sort of thing. And he comes out of one dream and he becomes totally inspired to do some art. So he heads to the studio with his friend Sam, who's a sort of artist assistant type lady. And he's so up his own arse that he decides to set light to a load of cellos and photograph it. And that'll be his new sort of piece of art, you know, as you do. He heads off. I won't talk you through the rest of the book, but I mean, it's 190 pages. So this is only like the first sort of 30 pages I've described.
Yeah.
Amongst it, he gets arrested. He hallucinates. He fights with nearly everyone he meets, in either verbally or physically. He talks to animals. He tries to talk to a fox, and the fox tells him to fuck off and talk to a badger. And it's this sort of real sort of trippy stuff, really interesting. But it does, I will say this about the book, it does pay it off. It does pay off the story, and it goes somewhere that you think, right, okay, I like that. That's done well. There is a point to it. You see that the sort of egotistical nature of the central character is the point in a lot of ways in what they're trying to say about this character and about the story and about the book in a whole. Really interesting stuff. It does on occasion stray into a couple of cliched areas, but I think it almost satirically. The talking animals is done satirically. We all know that whenever anyone takes a drug, there's an animal going to talk to them in a film or in a book. And we all know that's going to happen. Yeah. You know, there's always the dog talking to you while you're smoking weed or something in a book, isn't there, or film or something, you know. It does play well with character and stuff like that. Has everyone seen Lyndon's art? Have you seen it, Catherine, at all, or...?
No, what is it?
It's very sort of brushy. There's like a pastely brushy. He doesn't do straight lines at the edge of the pages. It's where the watercolors spilled over the edge of the panels and stuff like that. I think you'd like it. I do really do think you would. But saying that, this sort of a lot of the time the faces are slightly indistinct, and that's a stylistic choice. If that makes sense, you get these sort of blank staring faces and stuff like that. But it doesn't affect this. Strangely, it doesn't affect his sequential. So the flow between the panels works really well in relation to the narrative above and beyond that experiment, which I think is testament to how good he is and how good he's become. You know, really good stuff. As I say, he doesn't cut any corners with this. And I know it's taken him, I think, up to a couple of years to complete the art. I've never met Jordan, who wrote it, but it's a lovely little collaboration they've got going there. The dialogue really sparks over and floats above, and often combines with the sort of the roughness of the visuals. Really clever stuff. And it's not a book you should read quickly, I think, either. I mean, it took me a good few hours to read it. And it's, how often do we read a comic and we think about it later on when we're driving the car? It's not that common, is it? You know, and I went back and had to think about it. I would say, if you're going to read it, wait until you've had a couple of pints and you're on that late train home from London or wherever you're going to be. It's got that sort of strange quality to it. Really, really nice. I really enjoyed it. As I say, I bought it on the Kickstarter, but it is available to buy. If you go to Lyndon, Lyndon White, Whyte.com, LyndonWhyte.com, or you can find Jordan on Twitter, who's the writer, at Jordan Sam Adams. Really good fun. I'm really glad that I backed this. It's one of these things that is a real labour of love, and I'm glad he made his money, and I'm glad it came out so quickly. He did the wise thing. He got nearly all the work done before kickstarting it, which is always a clever thing to do. Bear in mind, Lyndon was on the panel, the Kickstarter panel I did at True Believers, and he was the guy who said, look, don't sketch in every book, you will regret it. And what do you know? My book sketched in. So I think this may be where he learned that lesson. yes, it's a really gorgeous package. Easily the sort of book you'd see on a shelf and think it's come out from a major publisher of some kind. You could easily see it in Waterstones, that sort of thing. Yeah, very good. There you go. That's my first one.
Nice.
Guys?
Dan, do you want to go next?
I've got two. One's a quick one. Which for a film I saw on Saturday night called The Ritual. I'd never heard of it before.
Oh, yeah. All right. I want to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's talking about that.
It's four old college friends decided to take a hiking trip deep into the Swedish wilderness in order to kind of bond and reminisce about old times. However, the inexperienced hikers soon find themselves hopelessly lost, and their fragile friendships begin to crack as old resentments surface. They become increasingly desperate to escape the woods. They are not alone. Someone or something malevolent is watching them, intent on making them face their deepest fears and ensuring they never leave. I can't really go too much into the film without spoiling it, but it's a really nice one to watch. There's kind of a couple of things that pop up that's quite unexpected. Okay. And after seeing the usual dreck that they have like on Netflix, et cetera, this is like refreshing sort of change. Someone doing something a bit different. So check it out. I think you can get it on Apple for like a few quid. I'm not sure where else you can rent it. But it's annoying. Okay. It's
based on a novel as well. I remember.
It's on Netflix everywhere else in the world apart from in the UK.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, great.
It's a British film, so that's great. It's
great. Not...
Should I? Do you want to do your one, Vince, and then I'll do my comic review after that?
Yeah, okay. Tony spoke of something that could quite easily be from the big publishers, and I'm going to talk about a book that I picked up at True Believers. From our friends at Disconnected Press. Yes.
Hey. Yes, I'm wanting to hear about this. Yeah.
A story by Lizzie Boyle, art by Connor Boyle, letters by Jim Campbell. Now, if you've listened to the True Believers episode, I did a little interview with both of them saying about it, and this book is essentially untitled because of what it is. Yeah. But the cover is a beautiful piece of artwork by Connor, and there's just lots of words running down the side, sort of spy, fraud, magician, conspiracy, saviour, immigrant, hero, freak, trickster, terrorist, alien, portent, or miracle. Any one of those could be the title. And basically, it's Disconnected Press are taking on the superhero genre.
Okay.
And here's the blurb on the back. It's the best way to do it, because otherwise I'll just mess it up. You know me. If you saw a man walking on water, what would you think? Superhero? Magician? Messiah? Freak? A fishing boat caught in a storm off the coast of Mexico. An extraordinary rescue caught on camera. The world's attention focuses on the small town of San Julian. Everyone has a theory. Everyone wants to know who or what is Luis Aguado. Now, basically, this is a look at almost superheroics in real life now, in this modern era. And it starts off straight away. This Lewis is having tests done to him, and the doctors are saying, you know, he's perfectly healthy. So the question is, how did you do it? And then you flash back to, you know, he's a quiet, simple man, and he's working on a fishing boat, and the fishing boat goes out into a storm. And there's two boats that go out in the storm. One of them capsizes, and that, you know, there's almost nothing they can do about it. And Lewis jumps into the water, and then what happens from then on changes his life completely, because it's caught on camera. Because he does literally walk on water and runs over to get the men out of the water. And from then on, the story is how would the modern world react to something like that happening? He obviously looks. He did it because it was the right thing to do, and, you know, saving lives. But you can see in his face immediately, oh no, it's kind of what have I done? Because one of the fishermen was recording it. And then just after it happens, cut a long story short, this book is absolutely phenomenal on every level. It's just a one-shot story. Obviously, Lizzie's script is absolutely fantastic. It's quite cinematic in its own way. They have these wonderful pages which are just, they're online sort of, sort of people comments like on YouTube right. and stuff, because someone's posted it to YouTube, and you'll see
YouTube these... obviously the go-to place for the most intelligent people in
yeah exactly yeah. But and all the comments totally just show that, you know, like one guy, what does he say, oh hey look, another blurry photo showing a lot of nothing, get a better phone, if I was there I'd take a much clearer pic. Which gets the response, they were in a boat, you fucking moron. How do you even survive day to day being that dumb? And, you know, so it becomes people arguing with themselves in the comments. And, I mean, they're funny moments, but it really does. It's one of the best examples of showing, like, the modern online social media society and how they would react to this thing. Because you have people sort of saying, you know, from, you know, praise God, you know, this is a miracle, he's obviously an angel, to people saying he's a spy, you know, he should be tested, to people saying it's fake, which ties into the cover, all those words on the cover. And in the middle of it, you've got this man who, you know, the government gets involved, and he just wanted a quiet life, he just wants to be left alone, and he has these sort of abilities that he doesn't know how it happens, but he's almost the most powerful superhero, you know. Do you know what I mean? If he was in a Marvel comic, he'd probably have ridiculous powers. But he's just a 75-year-old man just trying to quietly live his life, and how he gets caught up and how the world then wants a piece of him, and to try and break down exactly what he is and what he's done and what he could do for the world moving forward. That is all I'm going to say about the story, because I knew nothing about it. I mean, it looks lovely, but... And to sit down and just read, you know, sometimes you can pick up a comic, look at a page, and you kind of know what you're going to get with it. This was not one of those, because I picked up a page and I thought, you know, it looked beautiful, but wasn't quite sure what the story was. But when I started from page one, I did not finish until the end, and it is absolutely just a home run on every level. I think this is the best thing that Lizzie and Connor have done, and that's
good.
That's saying quite a bit, because they've put out a lot of anthologies. They've done a Choose Your Own Adventure, but this is my favourite thing they've done by far. You know, I mean, they're a man and wife, creator couple, and this is, you know, when you can see two creators who are on the same wavelength. They are like, is it Gabriel Hardman and Kareem Becco?
Yeah, they're a couple, aren't they?
You know, for those American listeners who know that couple, Connor and Lizzie are like the UK version of that for me.
Okay.
You know, because they're just absolutely beautiful. Connor, he had just come off Hookjaw to do this. He just finished Hookjaw, which is absolutely, his artwork's absolutely amazing in that. And I did ask him how was it going from one story all about water to another story, which is...
Oh, I heard you ask him that, yeah.
Pretty much all about water.
Yeah.
And he was very diplomatic. Said it was quite therapeutic, like drawing the waves and the water and stuff. And you know, that sort of thing would terrify me, and it's a very difficult thing to get right, especially like a stormy sea. But I think Connor's one of the best in the UK. I really do. And this book, which is done in very subtle tones, very muted. I wouldn't say black and white, because there are splashes of colour in it, but it's very desaturated. Some of the artwork's quite sparse, you know. So you're just focusing on the action and what people are saying.
Yeah, it's got some great buzz from True Believers, didn't it? I saw a few people post up saying how good this was. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It came out at Thought Bubble last year. And obviously I wasn't in the Thought Bubble, so I didn't see it. But
yeah, the thing is about the Thought Bubble last year, I don't know if you found this, Catherine, it was so packed in all the... It was hard to sort of catch up with people. There's loads of people I missed at that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I know Disconnected, they do a few shows around the year. If you see this, get it from them. It will be one of the best comics you read all year. I mean,
they're bound to be at Sice, aren't they, I would think, if they're going to be anywhere.
I think they're going to be at Sice.
They're from that part of the country, are they? Or
They're just down the road from me.
So they live in the wilds of the country then, Catherine.
Yeah. Where all the best people do. No. I mean, other than them just being nice people, you know, just they're putting out proper good comics. And I think that, I mean, I'd like to, even though this is a one shot and the story ends, do you know what I mean? It's not like you're waiting for part two. The world interested me enough to see more of it. So, you know, I love it. You can find out at disconnectedpress.co.uk and follow them on Twitter at disconnectedprs, and just look it up. I mean, it's hard to sort of say just Google this word, because it is untitled. And they've created a story, and they've obviously purely created this story and then thought about, well, what do we call it afterwards? It was like, well, it's a bit of every, you know, it's almost everything. You can't put it into a certain genre, as it were. Even though they said, well, it's our take on superheroes, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people might say, oh, that's no good. Do what they like. It's their comic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I quite like that. It's like, they don't, you know, they don't want to describe it, so they don't. So that's how it works, isn't it?
And sometimes when you get people sort of saying, oh, you know, it's almost like a modern real world take on the superhero genre, you think, roll your eyes and think, oh, right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, oh, I've read the Ultimates.
Yeah.
You know, they do that.
Yeah. What is going to be the easy go-to, isn't it? Just a superhero constantly on Twitter or something like that. But this is beautiful storytelling big shout out to Jim Campbell on the letters as well. So
Jim actually letters, I think, about 60% of all comics in the UK.
He does.
Yeah,
fantastic stuff. So definitely get 2 weeks in a row. I think I've mentioned books that might be my books of the year.
Well,
I know. It's almost like I've just blown it. It's just
do another one next week.
Oh god! Every week now. I've got. Oh my god.
Yeah, you got to live the dream.
Yeah. Anyway, Dan or Tony, who wants to go next?
Go on, Danny. Go on,
Dean. This is Resurrection Men, issue one. I'm not sure if we've actually reviewed this on the show.
Oh, no, we haven't. Yeah.
But I was given this by Rory when we did Cheltenham. Because I was sort of saying I didn't get a chance to pick it up. And he said, I've got one here. And he gave it to me. So that's cheers, awesome. Rory.
Yeah, he's good
at it. Yeah, I read the blurb. What is Resurrection Men? What if you could raise the dead? Who would you bring back? And what would you do with that power? Resurrection Men tells a story of power, manipulation, mystery, and horror. It's a story of fathers and sons and the lengths people will go to control others. It's a cracking little comic. It's written by N.S. Poole. Dan Hill edits it. It's the art's by Rory McDonald and N.S. Poole did the lettering. So kind of got a writer doing the doubling up on the duties there, doing the lettering. Paul's done really nice. I think this is his first comic. He's done well at this. He came up to us and spoke to us at a table at London Super Comic Con.
He showed us this, didn't he?
Yeah,
on
he did.
Phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's come out really well. It's really nice. Yeah. He had a lot of passion about it and it's really paid off. He invited me onto the Discord chat. I mean, being an older man, didn't know what the fuck that was. I went on it for a bit, but I couldn't keep up with another social media thing. I've got like two or three on the go, and like even then they're like, oh, fuck me, I feel like I'm spending too much time on that as it is.
Yeah, you're busy throwing chainsaws around supermarkets.
Yeah, exactly. I can't can't keep up with the gold, you know what I mean? You've got to get out there. But the story's really cool. It's got like lots of intrigue and sort of double dealing going on. It's got a nice supernatural tone going on throughout. The first issue is quite relatively slow burn. It's kind of setting all the pieces in place before the meat of it kind of gets going. Rory doing the art, he's great. He's really done well on this. He's kind of, it shined on Griff Gristle with the Maddie's voice, but it really comes to life in this one.
I'd really like to see him in my little sort of daydream. I would really like to see him do a BPRD book. I think that'd be a great little fit, wouldn't it?
One of the things, these characters that there's a style to them, but they feel real and like they've got a weight in the world, and not every comic I read can say that. Do you know what I mean? They feel like there's a presence there, and there's some of the detailing he's got in some of the panels. There's a scene where the couple comes out of the tube station in London, and there's a scene like with a bus involved, and the detailing on it is fantastic. It's kind of, I'm quite familiar with those kind of scenes, and it feels like that's it. It's like he's gone there and taken reference or worked from reference, and it really works, really sells it. It's really nice. He's spot on. And if you want to find out more about the comic and the forthcoming issue too, you can check it out at nspool.co.uk/tag/resurrection-men.
Nice.
Take a look.
Cool.
You're on form tonight, Dan. But that's it. That's seriously a title to watch, I think, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All right, Tony, take us home.
Well, mine also is not a comic. It does contain art by Mr. Butcher there.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk very quickly, Meta Worlds, which is two stories, two prose stories in a hardback novel. The outside cover is done by Kiara McAvoy, who's quite a well-known sort of movie poster artist. She's put together the front and rear cover images. It's got spot illustrations by Mr. Butcher, and it's got two stories. First one is written by C.D. Mick, and the second story, which is the one I've actually read, I've started reading it by Harry Harris, who's a friend of ours, and a good egg, and a bit of a convention buddy. We got to go to the pub with him at... Where did we go to the pub with him?
Wimbledon.
Wimbledon, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
He's a great bloke.
Yeah, top bloke. So it's two stories. MMI Meta Merc Investigations, which is the one I read, and the first story is called Silencer. It's done a bit differently. It's in a couple of ways, really. Firstly, it's not like a traditional novel. It's written like a very detailed film script, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So the stage direction areas of the if this were a film script are much longer and much more describing, and then it splits it up into the way that they dialogue in movie and some comic strips. You know, where it's sort of sectioned off with just the name and the dialogue rather than being in a paragraph. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it features a team of enhanced individuals, so it's a bit like a sort of special forces team in England. Which is proper in our wheelhouse. You know, it's got that sort of almost like a Marvel UK feel to it. You know, remember the Knights of Pendragon or something like that?
Yeah.
You know? Danny Carter's an ex-detective sergeant in the Met Police. They aren't by law allowed to employ Metas, so he is made redundant and he heads off to the MMI, the Meta Mercs Investigations. You first meet him, he's at a sort of undercover operation where he's fighting a bare-knuckle underground fighting ring, which then gets raided. And he joins up with some ex-forces, ex-special forces, an ex-marine, another police officer. And it's just sort of hard-boiled, unapologetic adventure, which is going to be the start of a series. It's really good, really interesting. And because of the way it's written, I've read quite a few film scripts over the years, mostly for fun. But you can actually get into the groove with it, if that makes sense. And it sort of rattles along because you're not reading the he said, she said bits. You know, you're just straight into the dialogue. The back of the book was something that I'm sure we'll all love. It's got like, do you know Ahotmu, the official guide to the Marvel Universe type comics?
Yeah.
Like those magazines, which have got like a description, and it's got the code name, the height, the age, the physical description, the powers, the costume. It's got like a little description every couple of pages for different. It's even got like code name Thief Taker, real identity Kate Kincaid, born Bexley and Kent, age 31, description. You know, it's got those sort of pages.
Yeah.
It's real fun. Yeah. I really like that sort of, like you were saying earlier, Catherine, a bit like sort of Top Trumps. A little bit like that, you know, something you can play with. This is definitely something that's going to be going places. So I think it's definitely the start of a series. And I know Harry has got plans for other novels, which he's spoken to me about. So if you go to www.media, M-E-D-I-A, so it's Media Aria, so it's MediaAria-CDM.com, MediaAria-CDM.com, you can get a copy. It's also on Amazon. I got mine through Amazon. And you can find Harry on Twitter at HHarrisMMI. So have a look for that. Yeah, really good stuff. Yeah, really interesting.
If you enjoy your superhero fiction as opposed to comics, there's a website and a community called the Pen and Capes Society.
Oh, okay.
And it's all about superhero fiction as opposed to writing comics. So
is it?
Maybe
is
that... Mary Harry can check them out as well.
Ah, have you got... Do they take submissions? Because I used to submit to a site years ago. I wrote a load of Batman fiction. I might stick it on there. So stuff. Yeah.
I'll have to check because then they're twinned with the Collective of Heroes. And
oh, are they? Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Catherine, have you ever thought about like writing a like sort of conventional superhero tale?
Probably not superheroes. I don't think I would do that very well at all.
I've heard you now. We've talked for a while. I think you could bash a few people up, Catherine. I think you'd be fine.
Yeah.
I could kick some ass. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Thanks.
Well, the magic versus Nazis isn't too far from.
No, it's not. It's not too far from punching bad guys, but you know, just with magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meditation.
That comic is me sold.
Yeah,
it sounds awesome.
Oh, good. Yes. Yay. We have another copy sold sometime in the future.
Well, you must come back on when it's ready to go. Yeah.
That would be awesome. Yes.
Didn't you say it's kickstarting or it's not?
No, well, We're pitching it.
Nice.
Yeah. I just finished all the sample pages, so I think I've got like 12 pages from a bunch of different sections and a cover and a variant cover that we're sending around.
Oh, nice. Well, when it's confirmed with the publisher, publishers out there, get on it. Yeah. And thank you very much for joining us this week, Catherine.
Oh, thank you.
And you've been so good. We've just been talking for like 20 minutes, and you've been very politely sitting there and just listening to us. I feel so bad.
That's all right. I've been like, you know, sort of ahhing and yesing and listening and nodding along.
I did point out during the week to someone who was talking about podcasts, and I said it's very difficult not to keep saying yeah all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, this person I spoke to, they said, yeah. I said, there you go.
Yeah. listeners, do we say yeah too much in every show? No. If you think
comment below.
Well, actually, Catherine, there's several different ways they can get in touch with us.
Here we go.
Do tell.
Thanks. I've never had a guest actually just sort of like pitch it to me like that. Amazing. Right. Brilliant. That was a low baller. Right, let's go. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got any letters for our comics, send them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be posting up the latest guests for you to follow, etc. And more. We haven't done a poll in a while. Who knows? Tony and Dan both have the keys to the Twitter account, so if there's something really dodgy, it's not me. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you just want to talk about making comics or just comics talk in general, whether you're a reader or a creator or whatever, go to Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. It's really the only reason to have a Facebook account, let's be honest.
Oh God,
Yeah.
Apart from the cat pics.
Well,
I'll tell you what you can do on Facebook now. You can go to that buy button and buy stolen property all about the UK. It's quite good.
Nice.
Yeah, useful.
You can also rig an election.
Yes, very true.
Yeah. That's quite a lot you can do on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. But and basically, you just need to join our group. That's what you should do on Facebook. Don't listen to these people.
Conspiracy theorists.
Yes. Thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review. We really truly appreciate it. We had a couple of nice ones recently, and it helps get the word out about the show.
Yes.
And the more people that listen to the show, the more people discover new and brilliant comics, and everyone's happy. We just want to make everyone happy. It's getting late, isn't it? Thank you for listening to us. This is the part of the show where it's just going all downhill.
Yeah.
It's been a long
evening. It's quite late going off the rails this week.
I know. Yeah.
It's a good 20 minutes ago.
Eyebrow this week.
Yeah.
I think it's that higher level
Yeah.
The slower descent down.
Yeah. We're probably a bit scared that she was going to fuck us up. That's what...
Yeah. Kick our asses. She's American and Scottish, you see. That's the combination of both.
I heard it in a voice then. Stop it, Tony. You might get...
Let me just go find an iron brew and my chainsaw and I'll just light
down my... Oh, dear. Yes. Also, thank you for listening, whether it was on the Stitcher Network, on the Podnose Network, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod, Cock, Roach. There you go.
Did you really have to break it up like that?
Let's make it clear on the radio.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
EzoYez on Twitter. Please sign up to tinyletter.com/cockneykungfu. I'm putting a bit of a question out this Wednesday that I want answered. So I'm getting everyone to look at themselves and see if they're doing the right thing. That's what I'll say. Probably caused loads of hate mail back towards me again. And neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk, which I put a couple of new things up this week. Please go and read. Nice. There you go.
Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard @VanguardComic.com.
Nice. Which is on fire at the moment. Great new pages, Dan. Loving it.
As soon as this issue comes to an end, I'm foots down on the old Viper Part 2 pages.
Cool.
Oh, lovely. You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And once again, Catherine, thank you very much for joining us this week. You made
thank
the
you
show
so
highbrow.
Much,
yeah.
You have done the impossible.
You've done good.
Where can people find you online, etc.?
I am on Twitter at Withryn, W-I-T-H-R-Y-N, and on Tumblr at ESS Publications. I am on the Facebooks at Catherine Briggs Comics, and my website is CatherineEBriggs.com, and Catherine is spelled K-A-T-H-R-Y-N, because we all have to be different somehow.
Nice. And also, check her stuff out on Comic House, so the next time you see her at a show, you can pick up the physical copies.
Correct.
There you
yes,
go.
Yes, please do.
Yes. So there you go, folks. Another cracking show in the bag. Thank you very much for listening. And from Dan, Tony, Catherine, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of cool comics. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Yeah.
Bye.
Tony, you can't really write that in a card. That hurt their feelings. I said, it's a joke.
It's a joke, yeah. I wouldn't, if I didn't think that I didn't like them, they couldn't take a joke, I wouldn't put it.
Yeah, yeah. I got a card once from work that was just pictures of horses. And my missus said to me, she wasn't my wife at the time, she said, why have you got a card with horses on? I went, oh, I just said I liked horses. The truth is, I used to go on about thinking it was funny to feed the horse all the time.
The worst one I've ever done was someone's wrote a big long message and I just put an arrow to it and put ditto, Dan.
I'm so nicking that.
That's such a level of disrespect. It's unbelievable.
Oh, Jesus. That doesn't even rhyme.
Most things don't.
That's the wisest words I've ever heard you say.
Oh. Yeah, things don't have to rhyme.
Yeah. You're so deep, man. So deep. I know, man.